These three letters are Hebrew letters, and they spell a Hebrew word that is 3,000 or 4,000 years old at least. And this word has a secret in it. It has the secret to how to become a balanced person, how to become a deeper person. And the way we're going to unlock this secret is by looking at how this word pops up in the Hebrew scriptures. Because basically these three Hebrew letters take several different forms and are spelled in slightly different ways in the Hebrew scriptures, and so they give us a fuller sense of the word. And that's how it's going to answer our question. These three Hebrew letters are Aleph, Zayin, and Nun. Roughly they would spell Azan. Although this Aleph is a stand-in vowel, it can sometimes make the A sound or the O sound. So anyway, but this three-letter root spells a couple different Hebrew words that will tell us a very, very old understanding of how to become a more balanced person. I'm going to show you four places in the Hebrew scriptures where this root turns up, and then I'll ask some questions, and I'll give you some time to just pause and reflect on it, and then we'll have some discussion also. In the book of Shemot, or Exodus, the second book in the Torah, this root takes the form Ozen, and it means this thing, and this thing. My Ozen is my ear. In English, you would spell that O-Z-E-N, unless you're in the States, then you spell it O-Z-E-N. So this root means ear, Ozen, in Exodus chapter 21, verse 6. I'll just read you the passage. It's a law about an indentured servant. So if someone is so deeply in debt or goes bankrupt and he can't pay his debt, then he works for the person to whom he had the debt for 6 years, after which he's allowed to go free. Basically, he's paid off his debt after working for 6 years. And it says that if during that time his master gives him a wife and he has kids with the wife, and if he really loves his wife and he loves his kids and he loves his master, he can work for his master for the rest of his life if he wants to. That is an option. And then it gives the procedure for how he becomes a servant forever. And it says, Vehigisho Adonav, his master will bring him near, El Ha Elohim, to the judges, Vehigisho, and he shall bring him near, El Hadelet, to the door. O, El Hamazuzah, or to the doorpost. Veratza Adonav, and his master shall pierce, Et Ozno. Did you hear that? His Ozen. Ozno. His master shall pierce his Ozen ba malzea, with something that you would use to pierce, essentially, a piercer. Va'avado, and he will be his servant, le'olam, forever. So there, you can hear, your Ozen is your ear. This three-letter root is, so that was a noun, your Ozen, your ear. This three-letter root is also used as a verb in one of the last parashas, one of the last Torah portions in the Torah. In fact, that Torah portion is named after it. See, the Torah, the first five books of Scripture, are broken up into weekly readings so that the Jewish community all around the world goes through the whole Torah every year. And we're literally on the same page with each other every week. It's very neat. And each one of those readings is called a parasha in Hebrew, like a portion. And it's named after one of the first, it's named after the first key word in that parasha. One of the final parashas is called Ha'azinu. You've probably heard that before. And it's named after the first word in the parasha. It's this long poetic song that Moses sings to the nation of Israel shortly before his death. So I'll read you the verse. He says, Ha'azinu Hashemaim. Listen, heavens. Va'adabera, and I will speak. V'tishma, and listen, Hashemaim, Ha'aretz, the earth. Imrei fi, the words of my mouth. So can you hear that? The verb azan means to listen, to hear. Ha azinu, listen. Moses says in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 1. So we have two meanings so far. Number one, this root takes the form ozen, your ear. Then here it takes the form, you could just say azan. That's probably the simplest verb form that can be used, which means to listen. This is where it gets fascinating. This root also takes the form of a noun in the book of Vayikra, Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 36, where it takes the form mosnaim and means a set of scales. Like, you know, you've probably seen the ancient scales where you have the bar and then you have something of a plate suspended from the bar on either side, and then you weigh something out to determine exactly what it weighs. In Hebrew, a set of scales like that is called mosnaim. I would transliterate that M-O-Z-N-A-I-M, mosnaim, a set of scales. In Leviticus 19:36, it says mosnei tzedek. So if you want to say scales of, you instead of saying mosnaim, you say mosnei. Tzedek is something that's correct or right, righteous, just. So where it says mosnei tzedek, it means like just scales or accurate scales. Avnei tzedek, an evan is a stone, so avnei tzedek is referred to like dry weights essentially. Efat tzedek, that's like a dry measure, an ephah, right? Vahin tzedek, hin is like a liquid measure. Yeyelechem will be to you. So he's saying, whether it be your scales or your weight system, your dry measures and your liquid measures, have just ones, have accurate ones. Don't be cheating your customers. It's a big deal to God. And so anyway, there we see that this root means scales of balance. And actually, in modern Hebrew, if you want to say to balance something, you say le'azen. Le'azen. It's from this very old Hebrew word for scales. Le'azen. The concept of balance or equilibrium in modern Hebrew is ma'azan. Ma'azan. So we get that from this old word in the Torah. And then finally, this word takes one more form. In the book of Deuteronomy, Devarim, chapter 23, verse 13, it means a tool. It's an azain. And I would transliterate azain or tool as A-Z-E-I-N. Azain. It's talking about if you have to go to the bathroom and you're camping out with the whole nation in the wilderness, where do you go? What do you do? Do you just take a dump in the middle of the camp? No, you do not. That is not hygienic. This is what it says. It says, V'yated te'yelecha, so like have a spade or a digging instrument, yated there te'yelecha, all azeinecha, on your tools. So along with your tools, have a spade, v'haya, and then, b'shivtecha chutz, go and sit down outside the camp, like squat outside, essentially, v'chafalta, and bury, va, it, v'shavta, and return v'chisita et tzeyatecha, and cover up what goes out of you. So basically it's some very practical instructions for when you're living in a camp with a couple million people and you have to go number two. Do you just take a dump somewhere in the camp? No, you do not. That was one of the things that made cities in medieval Europe horrible, horrible places to live, stinky places to live, and places where diseases and epidemics spread very rapidly. So anyway, I love how practical the Torah is. So anyway, in these instructions about what you got to do when you go to the bathroom and you're camping in the wilderness, we learn that this root means a tool. So those are the four ways that this Hebrew root is used in the Hebrew Scriptures. It means your ear, as a noun. It means to listen as a verb. It means scales of balance as a noun. And in modern Hebrew, also as a verb, means to balance. And it means a tool as a noun. So those are the four things that this root means. And now we're going to do some creative thinking. We're going to think about what the connection is between some of these usages, because therein lies the secret to becoming a balanced person. And maybe it'll help us to understand what that actually means anyway, because I think different people have different opinions about what it means to be balanced. So the Hebrew word for ears and your sense of hearing is the same word for scales, for a balance. So we learn that in Hebrew, your hearing and your balance are closely interrelated. Here's a question. Have you ever had an earache or a plugged ear where it caused you to lose your sense of balance? Isn't that interesting? I actually have a story about that for you. I'm going to show you something that I call my ear gusher. This thing has preserved my sanity on multiple occasions. I call it my ear gusher. I get like these massive buildups of wax in my ears sometimes, and it's really quite disgusting. But sometimes I'll have so much wax that it'll build up in my ear, and it'll create pressure, and it will make me distinctly uncomfortable. Like when that happens, like I can't take my mind off of it. It's constant, and it can actually become painful. And I can't just like stick my finger in my ear and dig, because it's too deep and my fingers are really big. And I even using a Q-tip, like I can barely even use a Q-tip. This is like getting really nitty gritty details, hey? But anyway, like even when I use a Q-tip, it doesn't work. So anyway, I discovered that I can save myself with this ear gusher. So what I do is I go and I fill the sink about half full with water that's just hot enough to be hot but not scalding. And then I depress it like this, and then I put it in the hot water and I let it go, and it fills up with hot water, and then I stick my head over the sink and I gush this thing into my ear. And it creates this hot flow of water through my ear that's not strong enough to damage my eardrum in any way, but that is strong enough to dislodge the earwax. So sometimes I'll have this like big chunk of disgusting earwax come out of my ear into the water. And it's actually a very gratifying feeling, I'll admit. And it's such a relief. So anyway, here's the interesting thing from that story. When I gush one of my ears out, very often after that, I'll get this crazy dizzy sensation. Like I will just totally lose my sense of balance. Why? Because like this water rushing against my eardrum, it was playing with my sense of balance. So there's a kind of gross story from my life about how my sense of balance is totally related to my sense of hearing. So like basically I think it's really neat that like biologically and medically speaking, our sense of balance is centered in our ears, and that's something that the Hebrew language recognized at least 4,000 years ago. 4,000 years ago, the Hebrew word for your ears and your sense of hearing was the same word for balance, for your sense of balance. So here's the question that I have for us that I would like us to stop and reflect on for a minute, and then we can share our thoughts and realizations. What does this understanding tell you about how to become a more balanced person? What is this understanding telling you to do? That's fantastic. I'll share a couple things that this tells me. Firstly, on a personal level, it tells me to listen to voices other than my own and those that agree with me, because that's our tendency, to listen primarily to our own voice, our inner dialogue, and then secondly to let other people in that just happen to agree with you, that just happen to support your biases, your presuppositions. Give ear to other voices that don't agree with you, that come from different perspectives. Why? It'll keep you from going to imbalanced extremes. Does that mean you have to believe everybody that tells you everything differently than what you think? No. But I think it's good to hear other voices. So a very practical thing this tells me is ask for other people's opinions and advice. It's very easy to go through life not doing that, to not seeking out other people's opinions, to not explicitly asking for their advice. And especially here in Canada, we're very politically correct people. We're not usually very free with our advice. We're not usually quick to blurt out our opinions, especially if they differ with the other person's. But if you have someone coming to you and say, you know what, you probably see things in a much different way than me, and I'd really like to hear about how do you see things and why do you see it that way. Not so that I can pounce on you and criticize you and argue with you. I just want to hear your perspective. Do that more often, and I guarantee you, from this understanding, it will help you to become a more balanced person. In a good way, in a healthy way. Maybe you could even say, in a righteous way. And number two, this understanding tells me in conflict resolution, listen to both sides, just like you have two ears, or you'll have an unbalanced and biased version of the story. It reminds me of that proverb from the book of Mishle, Proverbs, that essentially says, the first person to stand up in court is always right, until he's cross-examined, until his opponent starts asking him questions, until the other side of the story is heard. Thirdly, on a theological or an ideological level, this understanding tells me to listen to history. Know the history of the early Yeshua movement. Become a student of church history. Why? You'll be much less likely to become imbalanced and fall for false teaching. Funny thing, most of the false teachings going around today were going around 1800, 1900 years ago. And when you begin to read church history, you realize, denying that Yeshua is God, that's a really old false teaching. And you can read about that when you read, it's popularly called church history. There are many, many, many other examples. For instance, someone could argue, the early Christians worshipped on Sunday morning just like we do in the Protestant tradition. Or they could argue, the early Christians quit doing Passover because they believed in Jesus and they started doing Easter. And you read early church history and you discover, no, actually, the early Christians continued to go to synagogue when they could, and they gathered in homes on Saturday night, just like we're doing right now, actually. Kind of nifty. And yeah, later in church history, for instance, if you read Justin Martyr, early Christians were getting together before the sun even came up on Sunday morning, in little secret huddles, essentially. Pretty cool. You read about the Quartodeciman controversy in the early church in the mid-100s, when there was this agenda to get the early Christians to stop doing Passover on the 14th of Nisan, the first month, and to start getting them to do this new Easter deal on Easter Sunday. So you begin reading your history, and you begin realizing where practices come from, where different ideas come from, and you're able to figure out very quickly if they're true or not. So those are just a couple little examples for you. Fourthly, and most importantly, this understanding tells me to listen, Shema, to God, if I want to be a balanced person. That means studying His Word as an individual, studying His Word with my family, studying His Word as a community. That means blocking time out of my schedule for silence. It's very hard for me to listen to someone when my mouth is in motion, when my tongue is in gear. I've got to disengage the mouth. I have to stop the tongue, and then it's a lot easier to listen. So this understanding is telling me to block time out of my schedule for silence, either sitting quietly, getting out in nature, going for a drive or a bike ride or maybe even a run, whatever that looks like for me, whatever that looks like for you as an individual. This understanding is also telling me, in terms of listening to God and learning to listen to God, to grow in my sensitivity to His Spirit's nudgings, promptings, leadings, often which are gentle, are subtle, are something that takes time to learn and to learn to detect. Just like in a relationship, when you first meet someone, there's a lot that will go right over your head. There's a lot that goes under your radar. And as you get to know someone over time, you begin to detect those subtle nuances. You begin to detect those things that body language that would tell you, this person isn't enjoying this at all. Or, this person is feeling this way right now. Or this person would like to go and do that. Or whatever, right? It's the same with us and God's Spirit in each of us. Over time, we learn to know God's Spirit. We learn to hear God's voice through His Spirit within us. That also means learning to recognize when that thought flashing through your mind is actually the Spirit speaking to you. Not going to say that every thought that flashes through your mind is the Spirit, but I know for myself personally, I've had many times where it's like all of a sudden my heart will flare up. It'll feel like I get this little burning sensation inside, and I'll have something flash through my mind, and it'll be like an insight or a revelation or a mini vision, you could even say, from His Spirit. It's something that God is telling me, and that can sometimes be His Spirit also. So that's something to grow in, to become a more balanced person. And here's the hilarious thing. If you listen to God, people will not think that you're becoming a more balanced person. Most people will think you are becoming an imbalanced person if you spend more time studying His Word, if you spend more time sitting quietly or blocking time out of your schedule to hear His voice for yourself, if you're spending more time learning to follow the leadings of Yeshua's Spirit, learning to discern the vision that He is giving you. People will, in general, will think you're becoming a very imbalanced person. Just like when Yeshua called that first generation of disciples to follow Him, they became more balanced people, but to the imbalanced culture that they lived in, they seemed to be becoming increasingly abnormal, imbalanced. Hilarious how that works, hey? People will often think you're getting really religious, or you're becoming extreme. Maybe sometimes it's those people that are imbalanced, and for once in their lives they're seeing someone that isn't imbalanced, and that's throwing them off even more. So that's the first understanding that this ancient Hebrew word gives us. There's a very tight connection between your sense of hearing and your sense of balance. If you want to become a more balanced person, become a better listener. And not just to anything or anybody, of course, but in the ways that we just talked about. Here's another connection from this Hebrew word. On the one hand, you have this Hebrew word meaning your ears, your ability to listen. On the other hand, you have this word meaning a tool. So there's something about your ear that is a tool. There's something about your the way you listen that can be a tool to build things, to construct things. Because generally, that's what tools are used for, to get a job done, to build something. And I have a background in construction, and I love my tools, so I thought, great, I have an excuse to wear my tool belt tonight. So I'm going to put on my tool belt for this part of the talk and get out my old framing hammer here. Here's a tool. It's a hammer. Maybe you could call it an Azain, one of my Azainim. Specifically, I want to talk now about this connection between your ears and tools as it relates to building relationships. The art of listening is probably the most useful tool in your tool belt to build relationships, whether it be in your marriage or with family members, whether it be with friends, whether they be weak links, like just acquaintances, or your best friend, whether it be with neighbors, coworkers, anybody on the planet. We have so many relationships, and there are ways to build those relationships. There are tools that you can use to build them. You can also be a real tool, and you can destroy those relationships by doing certain things or not doing certain things. So let me ask you, can you just pick this hammer up and start using it? Let's say you've never held a hammer in your life, and you're on a construction site. Your buddy's building a house, and he tosses you a hammer, and he says, "Kate, I have this frame that needs to go up. Here's a bunch of framing nails. Whack it in." How is that going to be going at first? Do you think you might mash a couple fingers? Do you think you might whack a bunch of nails in sideways? Have a bunch of nails helter-skelter, bent over? Or maybe it'll be one of those classic cases where you finally get the nail in, and like the 2x4 is almost shredded from all of these indentations from all the spots where you missed. Have you ever seen that? It's hilarious. When someone's just learning how to hammer, and they finally, they get the nail in, but it's like they're like there are like craters all around the spot where the nail is, and it's like, that was not a good finishing job. Anyway, the point there is, just like it takes time and practice to learn the skill of using a hammer, it does take time. It does take practice. It does take intentional effort to learn the skill of listening to other people. The art of really hearing other people. And you know what? For most of us, I don't think we're very intentional about the art of listening. I don't think we really spend a lot of time consciously thinking about becoming better at hearing other people, hearing the other person in a conversation or in any context. Most people, in my opinion, don't really know how to listen. Most people are very poor listeners. And I'm sure we've all had experiences also in a friendship or in marriage where we didn't feel like the other person was really hearing us. So here's the cool thing. This old Hebrew word that means to listen, or, you know, to your ears, and for a tool, it's the same word. And there's a secret there. So I will ask you, and give you a minute to think about this, and then we can talk about it. What does this connection tell you about the art of listening? And what have you learned over the years about how to be the best listener that you can be? That's fantastic. I'll share with you a couple of things that I've learned about listening also. Here are some practical tips that you can drop in your tool belt of listening. Number one, ask questions. To become a better listener, learn to ask better questions. It can start with simple questions, but generally you want to, like, okay, if you really care about the person, if you don't care about the person, don't do this because you'll be fake, right? But if you really do care about the person, then ask questions to show that. Ask questions that will engage them. If you care about the person, you'll want to know, like, what they're thinking about, how they've been lately. What have they been dreaming about lately? What have they been frustrated about? All kinds of things, right? Just asking those questions is the first tip. Secondly, shut up. And that doesn't mean, like, just shut up long enough to get them talking and then jump on them and interrupt. It means, like be quiet and really listen to them. You know, very often it's easy to ask someone a question and then they begin talking, and halfway through the first sentence, you're like, oh, I have something I want to say about that, and you just interrupt. You just jump in with your own thoughts. It's easy to do that. In my opinion, it's also very egotistical to do that. So tip number two, be quiet. You can't listen while you're talking. Tip number three, make eye contact. To be honest, that's a tough one for me. Like, there are all these books about how to be a good friend, blah, blah, blah. And that's one of the things they talk about. I have a hard time with that for some reason. Like, I find either I just stare at the person, or else I'm just, like, sitting there, like, looking around. I'm totally listening, but I'm looking all over the place. And it doesn't look like I'm listening at all. I don't know why. Sometimes eye contact makes me really uncomfortable. Anyway, but that is a good one. Like, you want to kind of show them that you're looking at them, right? If they're talking to you and you're, like, looking over there at something that these people over there are doing, or your eyes are wandering around the room, what it's going to communicate that to them is you're really not listening at all. Fourth tip, nod. So, you know, if someone's talking to you, like, show that you're listening, not just by looking at them, like, but, like, you know, like, kind of, like, show that you're into it, right? You can nod. Fifthly, you can make affirming noises. I'll give you some samples of good and not so good affirming noises. Ah! Ah! That's not a good affirming noise. If someone's talking to me, like, ah! Like, they're gonna be like, that's overdoing it, right? Or if you're like, beep, beep, whenever they say something that really kind of hits your buttons in a good or a bad way, you know, beep, beep, like that's gonna throw them, right? Those are not good affirming noises. Good affirming noises are like when you're like, yeah, right, mm-hmm, for sure. Like little positive things like that, right? And if you ever listen to a good conversationalist on the phone, half the time or more, they'll just be sitting there listening and they'll be making those noises. And you just, over time, you get used to that. Actually, I've noticed something that I've kind of embarrassed myself sometimes with this, but if I'm at, let's say I'm at a church service or I'm at some event where someone's speaking, and I'm really into what that person's saying, like it's really registering with me, I'm tracking with the person, I end up feeling like it's just me and that person. And I'll start making those affirming noises without thinking about it. I'll be like, yeah, totally. Right, yeah. And I'll be like, oh, whoops, like maybe I should be quiet. Maybe I'm distracting the people around me from actually listening to that person. Or no, who knows? Maybe it gets them more into it also. I think the more Christian version of that, that's a little more sanctioned, is to say, amen, amen, amen. You can get away with saying amen as an affirming noise in most Christian settings. or maybe you can say yes, yes. That's about as far as you can go, though. But anyway, fifthly, make affirming noises. Sixthly, this ties into number two, shut up. Sixthly, leave a pause when they're finished speaking before speaking. Very often, the moment someone begins to pause, let's say to take a breath, if you just jump in right there, what you're saying is, I'm not really listening to you, I'm just waiting for my chance to get a word in edgewise and to tell you what I'm thinking about. Right, so you definitely, when in a conversation, leave that pause after where there's just a moment of quiet where you can just really savor what that person said, where you can show I'm really thinking about what you're saying right now. I have a friend in Saskatoon, Derek, and he's a king of this. I've seen him sometimes where like he'll be in a conversation with someone and they'll finish talking and he'll just look at them and be like, wow. You know, I'm just really, what you're saying is just really sinking in right now. I'm really thinking about that. And like, he'll say that because otherwise he would just sit there for several seconds, right? But I remember him doing that, like, and just thinking, wow, he's really listening to that other person. Seventhly, try to understand what the other person is saying, even if you disagree with them. A great way to do that is when the person is done speaking, leave that pause, and then repeat to them in their own words what they just said. Just say, you know, so what I hear you saying is this, or so if I get you right, is this what you're saying essentially? And then say it in your own words. Even if you disagree with them, just to understand what they're saying and why it is they're coming from that. Right? That's a great way to show someone that you're really listening. And you know what? If you do that, it'll force you to listen also. Because otherwise, you just won't know what they just said because you're so busy thinking about your comeback, thinking about the next thing that you have to interject into the conversation. Eighthly, after the person has said something, you may want to share a thought or tell a story related to what they just said. So instead of just jumping to the next topic with whatever it is that you want to say, just think, okay, this person just shared this thought, and I had a similar experience, or I was thinking about something related to that, and then share something that's related to what they just said. Don't seize the wheel and take the conversation in your own new direction. Sometimes there's a place for that, right? But in general, if you respond to what they just said, it's showing that you're really listening to them. And then, ninthly, sometimes people, if you ask them a question, they'll give a short answer, and then they'll stop. Because they're not sure if you're just going through the perfunctory motions, if you're just asking that question because that's what you do. Oh, how are you doing? Good, how are you? Good. You know, did you really care about how that person was doing, or were you just asking that because that's what we do in our culture? But if you ask it again, if you say really, how have you been lately? You know, it's the second time that the person's going to realize, oh, they weren't just going through the motions, like they really care about how I'm doing. Or, you know, or maybe they'll say something and be like, yeah, not so hot today. And if you say, well, how come? What's been going on? You know, you follow up your first question with another question that's related. That's a great way of showing people that you really care. Because you know what? Most of us are modest. Most of us aren't going to go, most of us don't live with our hearts on our sleeves. Most of us aren't going to go and just dump truck on a person the first time they ask us something. Right? We'll share a little bit, and then we'll stop. And if the person really cares, they'll ask another question, and we'll share a little bit more. And you know what? It feels so good to have someone there, and to be like, this person really cares about me. You know, this person is drawing how I've really been out of me. They're drawing my heart out in a really caring way. Who in this world doesn't want a friend like that? Like, who in this world doesn't need that sometimes? And, you know, when I think about Yeshua of Nazareth, I think he was the most loving human being who ever lived. He was the most caring person who ever existed. I would love to have been able to just follow him around and watch him in action. Like just watch him interacting with people. Watching him ask those questions. Watching him look people in the eye. Watching him make those affirming noises. Showing that he's really engaged with that person. Making them feel like they're the only other person in the world. Despite the crowd around, perhaps. Despite all of the activities going on. Surrounding activities. You know, I really believe that Yeshua could make a person feel special when he was talking with them. Make them feel like they were the only other person in the world. Because you know what, at that moment, maybe they were the only other person in his world, so to speak. You know, and it's the mark of a great conversationalist, it's the mark of a great listener, it's the mark of a great lover to be able to make a person feel that way. And why not? I mean, Yeshua made people feel that way. He is the greatest lover ever. Why not follow him? Why not learn to talk with people in the same way and develop his art of listening? And you know, when I think about it, there are many places in the scriptures where Yeshua would be the first to start the conversation, and he would start it with a question. Isn't that interesting? He would be the one to engage the other person. I think, for instance, of the story of that Samaritan woman who was she was like pretty loose. She had a bad reputation, right? And she came out to get water, and he was sitting by the well, and he asked her a question. He engaged her in a conversation. That would be one example of many in the Master's life. And that's what I want to finish this talk talking a little more about what this connection between our ears, our sense of hearing, and scales of balance and tools have to tell us. What does this understanding tell us about Yeshua of Nazareth, what he came to do, the objective of his mission, the relationship that every one of us either has or can have with him? Here's a question for us to contemplate for a moment along those lines. Our first parents, Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, there was a point when they listened to somebody who came to them in the form of a serpent. It was like the quintessential evil one came to them, and they listened to him. And through listening to him, they became imbalanced, and they caused all of humanity to become imbalanced. So here's the question along those lines. How did we as humanity become imbalanced as a result of our first parents listening to that evil being? What are some ways that we can see, what are some symptoms of that imbalance in our world today? For sure. There is a lot of skewed religion that's definitely a symptom of that imbalance that we got from our first parents because they listened a little too closely to the wrong voice. Here's a list of other symptoms that I see in humanity, and you see this on the news pretty much every day. Violence is a symptom of a very deep imbalance that we have as human beings. Our propensity towards addictions, whether it be drugs, alcohol, gambling, unhealthy forms of sex outside of marriage, shopping. I mean, there's so many, right? There's so many addictions. Some of them are more stigmatized than others. Some of them are more acceptable in our culture. But you know, that would be one. Materialism, when we're just locked in the physical dimensions and it's all we think about, is a symptom of imbalance. Egotistical and selfish behavior is a symptom of imbalance. Controlling and manipulative behavior in a relationship is a symptom of imbalance. Being depressed and suicidal is a symptom of imbalance. Being over-involved in a controlling or manipulative way is a symptom of imbalance. You know, being overly withdrawn or standoffish can also be a symptom of imbalance on the other side. There are so many things, you know, like, and you just begin to, watch the news, say, and you begin to see that all over the place, just how imbalanced we as human beings are. And that goes way back. And here's the good news. Just like Adam, our first parent, threw the whole human race into this wild imbalance, Yeshua came as the second Adam. That's a title of the Messiah that Shaul, Paul, used in his letters. Yeshua came basically to correct what Adam messed up. What Adam did wrong, Yeshua came to do right. So where Adam listened to the wrong voice and threw us into imbalance, Yeshua came as the second Adam to listen to the right voice, to listen to his Father, to obey his Father to the T, to the crossed T. He came to do that so that we could be restored to balances and inner balance as individuals, balance in families, in community, around the world. He came to restore to us a balance also between spirit and flesh. Materialism is an imbalance where you're all flesh, nothing but flesh, and that's all essentially that you think about, all that you live for. Locked in the physical dimensions. Yeshua came to bring that balance where we realize we are spiritual people, we're spiritual beings living in earth suits. You know, we're souls with a very deep organic unity with our physical bodies, of course. How does Yeshua do that? He does that by, just like God came and he sculpted the first human being in the beginning. And he was just this sculpted being with no breath of life, with no consciousness. And then he breathed into him, it says. He breathed into his nostrils the breath of life and he became a living soul, like a living person. A conscious person. That's what God does through Yeshua. He breathes on us inside. He breathes on our hearts. And he brings our dead hearts to life by his life-giving spirit. That's how he does it. And then, after he brings us back to life inside, after he restores that balance between spirit and flesh, so to speak, he gives us instructions in his written word, that help us live as spiritual beings, live balanced lives in this physical world. So when we listen to God and his Messiah, when we listen to his teachings and we practice them, it restores our balance as individuals, as families, and as communities. That is the healing that God offers to this world. That is the way that God offers this healing. If you believe the scriptures written by the prophets of Israel and then Yeshua's apostles, and this is really neat. This whole concept of balance, it's really wrapped up in the Hebrew word shalom. You know, the Hebrew word shalom, it's usually translated as peace, but it means so much more. Shalom means wholeness. It means completeness. Essentially, it means balance. Because something that is whole is balanced. Something that is complete is balanced. A whole person, a complete person, is a balanced person. And likewise, if you are broken, if you are incomplete, if you are not in shalom, so to speak, you're going to also be an imbalanced person. And here's the neat thing. I'll mention a couple of scriptures to you. I won't give you references for all of these, but this is what it has to say about Yeshua and his message with regards to shalom, with regards to the balance that we can experience through becoming people that are experiencing shalom. In one of the prophets of Israel, Isaiah, Yeshayahu, the Messiah is called the Sar Shalom, the Prince of Peace. That word there, Sar, Prince, it means an administrator, a governmental official. So he is the administrator of shalom. He is like the official in this government of shalom that every one of us can enter into, become citizens of, and live in on a daily basis. Therein lies balance. Yeshua's spirit that he imparts to us when we believe in him, when we follow him, is the spirit of shalom. So shalom isn't just some abstract concept. When we are living lives that are like revived by His Spirit, when we are living in a close relationship with Him, so that His Spirit gets all over us, we will also be experiencing His shalom. It talks about the fruit of the Spirit in the scriptures. Fruit there is an agricultural idiom that essentially means like what's yielded in your life. So if you're experiencing God's Spirit in your life, His Spirit will yield shalom in your life. The message that Yeshua proclaimed and the message that we proclaim about Him also is the message of shalom. In older English, it's called the gospel of peace. The gospel of peace is the message of shalom. So through Yeshua, through entering into that relationship with Him, through believing in Him, through following Him, through experiencing what He can do in each of our individual lives, we have shalom with ourselves. We have shalom with each other. We have shalom with the world around us. And we have shalom with the God who created this world. It's like through Yeshua, each of us as individual beings, and ultimately we as humanity, are restored to a balanced relationship with the universe, with the Creator of the universe, and with the people that He has populated this universe with. That's great news. So that's how this old Hebrew word that has to do with our sense of hearing, with the verb to listen, that has to do with tools, that has to do with scales of balance. That's how this old Hebrew word tells us about the Messiah. How this old Hebrew word tells us about the mission that Messiah came to accomplish. It tells us about the experience that every one of us can have when we listen to Him and His teachings, when we follow Him and His teachings, when we experience His Spirit and the power of His Spirit to change us from the inside out, to bring us into that balance. That's what Yeshua is offering every human being on the planet today. That's what He's offering every person in our city. That's what He's offering each of us. And the question is, will we take it?
Shalom, I'm Izzy Avraham, and thank you for joining me for this talk. I delivered these messages live during the years I was leading a congregation. They're now hosted by my Hebrew school, Holy Language Institute, at holylanguage.com. If you're interested in the talks I've done since then, or if you'd just like to say thank you for these teachings, become a member at holylanguage.com.